Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Boomer Bus on the Divine Thoughts channel. I'm your host, Terry, and today's episode we'll be looking at the defensive tackles for the 2016 draft. So bringing back another episode, I know it's been a little bit of time. Honestly, I'm behind a little bit on my draft timeline, time frame, whatever. Kind of went into what that looks like on my first episode, but anyway, yeah, just a little bit behind. Like I said, every year is different. Just depends on what's going on in my normal social life. And, yeah, so not too far behind. I did finish the corners, and I am starting on the safeties hopefully tonight or tomorrow. I don't know. It's already kind of late. But I would say typically on the last day of the combine, which is ironically the day for the D-backs, that's usually when I'm in the middle of the D-backs or, you know, finishing. So, yeah, a little bit behind, but just trying to catch up on that. And then, so, you know, I'll be pushing out the episodes a lot more because I will be done with the first round evaluations, done with the defensive side, so I can start putting these episodes out. You know, they're already done. I just got to, you know, have time to sit down and, you know, do this episode. But, yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at now. But anyway, defensive tackles. So just to start off this disclaimer for the next few episodes probably, I am a former D-line and I coach a lot of things, but defensive line was my first love, still is, will always be my love. And so I am pretty tough when it comes to grading defensive line. Than most other people are, I would say. So, because I'm very specific on what I want to see and, you know, what traits translate to what. But anyway, with that being said, like always, I'm going to kind of go into some of the traits and whatnot of the position to do. So, when talking about the gradable characteristics, it's the same for me, defensive tackles, as it is for defensive ends. It's the get-off. So we're talking, man, everyone says get-off. I'm trying to think of, like, the proper term. I don't even know if there is one. But the get-off, if you don't know, is basically the ability to slow out of your stance. So once the ball is hiked, what's your ability to explode from your stance across the line? Yeah, so to get off starts off everything. Very important to be an explosive player on the line because that can make a lot of things easier. So that's the first thing, great, and it's 1 through 5, like always. Closing speed. This is probably done with almost all of the defensive players that I evaluate, regardless of position. Closing speed is just how quick you close on a player. So if you are running downhill or if you're chasing a quarterback, you know, or, you know, whatever it is, when you're coming to make contact with a offensive player, how fast are you at closing down space and getting there? And so, yeah, that's pretty simple, I think. For defensive line, a lot of the stuff is running backs, you know, chasing backside. Of course, chasing quarterbacks on bootlegs or rollouts or anything of that nature where you want to see how fast the guy can get to the ball. And for defensive tackles, it's not as prevalent, but it's still definitely something to know. Once they get off a block, what's their ability to explode and, you know, get to the ball carrier? Whether that's the quarterback for a sack or a running back. So then we talk about the motor. Very big for defensive players. Do you kind of take off plays after the ball goes away from you, or are you always constantly trying to get to the ball? Are you constantly trying to get off blocks? Do you kind of get blocked and just stop? So what's your ability? What's your motor like? And then hand technique. All of these are very important. I don't know if I could pick one over the other, but hand technique, I feel like, would definitely have to be, you know, 1A, 1B for me. You have to have hand technique. A lot of players get away with pure athleticism, just getting off the ball and running around people, and or pure strength, you know, pushing people around, things like that. But hand technique, whether it's the run or the pass game, the ability to shed blocks, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about defensive line. Now, different schemes call for different things, but for me, at least, in my philosophy, I'm always looking for the guys that can get off blocks right now, create havoc, create penetration in the backfield. So that's kind of simple. So other than that, you know, I talk about the pad level, same thing like I do offensive line. There's low man wins in the trenches. You got to be low. I'll talk about the ability to take on double teams. There was a few techniques to take on a double team, but mainly is the person giving ground? Are they getting pushed back 5 yards, you know, or are they able to be stout against the double team? Being stout, we also talk about at the point of attack. So with offensive line, I talk mostly about centers with point of attack, but for defensive tackles or anyone on D-line, really, what's your ability, you know, in the one-on-one block to hold your ground, because you cannot give up ground on a defensive line. That's just number one. You have to maintain the line of scrimmage. So what's your ability to be stout? Then, of course, I'll talk about the pass rush ability, and then I'll talk about the ability to stack and shed. So stack and shed can be called a bunch of different things. This could have even been draft speak, but stack and shed, something called butt and press, all this other stuff, butt and escape, whatever. But it's basically your ability to get extension with your arms, extend your arms out on the offensive or whoever's blocking you. Extend your arms out to create space so that they're not, you know, getting their hands in your chest or leaning on you and pushing you back. Create space, stop their momentum, and that's the stack. So when you stack them, that's what we mean. Your ability to extend out, boom, explode the hands, just like you would see someone on a sled or you know, a dummy when they hit the bag out. That's the stack. And then shed, of course, is shedding the block or escaping, whatever move you use, quick swim, rip, whatever, to get off the block and then attack the ball. So you'll see this a lot with defensive tackles where some guys just like to handle offensive linemen. They'll get the extension on them and then they'll wait till they see the ball, boom, get off the block, make the tackle. And some people like that. I mean, different philosophies for that. I personally like you just get off the block and then, you know, make the play and, you know, see where it's going. But some guys like it where you control the lineman, so the running back thinks you're blocked, but then you escape at the last second and then make the hit. So stack and shed, very important for a lineman no matter what the scheme is. So anyway, getting into defensive tackles, I think traditionally the last 3 years, I would say, I put 3-4 DNs with the regular DNs, and it was just, you know, if DN is in your title, you're a DN, and I'm not going to try to, you know, mess around with that. But the valuations for them are very different from DN and D-tackle, traditional DNs, I should say. And so when looking at 3-4 DNs, they are glorified defensive tackles. They're just in a different technique than, you know, a 4-3. So a lot of what they do and the way I, you know, evaluate them is very pretty much defensive tackle. So this year I've lumped them in defensive tackle. So the group I'm talking about will include some of those names that you might say, oh, that's a DN. So when I talk about DNs, I'll be talking about the traditional on-the-edge 4-3 DNs, and the 3-4 DNs will be in this group. So with that being said, this group, trying to go into the top three is very difficult. Had to have a couple of them where it's like, yeah, there might be four or five, I don't know. But, again, I try to go with the consensus of, you know, what's out there from the quote-unquote experts and then kind of give you my ranking. after that. But with this group, it's very hard to go top three. This is a deep, deep class on the defensive line, particularly with the interior, whether that's a nose, one tech, three tech, or a 3-4 DN, which is a four technique. I don't understand why everyone keeps calling five techniques, and people in the media say that, and casual fans say that. Yeah, oh, he's a five technique. He's not a five technique. A five technique lines up on the outside shoulder of a tackle. That's what you see in the 4-3 traditionally when the end is on the outside shoulder, there's no tight end or anything. That's a five technique. If you're a 3-4 and you got a pass rush outside linebacker and the five technique, then no one's in the B gap. So that would make no sense. Traditionally in the 3-4, of course, you have different fronts and stunts and alignments, but your base, they're going to be lined up head up on the tackle so they can attack the B gap more times than not. Or 4-eye, where they're at 4 in the inside shoulder. But 5 technique, they're not 5 techniques. I know people have different numbering, which is stupid and weird because 90% of coaches use the old school numbering system from Bear Bryant. But anyway, sorry, that's a tangent. It just annoys me when people say 5 technique. It's 4 technique. But anyway, so they're all lumped up in here. So with that being said, kind of pull out who's who, I would have to say, and you know, you could disagree, but just from what I'm looking at, we're going to start with DeFrost Buckner from Oregon, who is probably one of the higher rated interior guys. And he played 3-4 DN. He's 6'7", 290, so similar large basketball frame as Eric Armstead last year from Oregon. And but a little bit different player. So when talking about him, he's fluid athlete. I mean, when you're 6'7", 290, it's hard not to be large, but I still think he has a more athletic frame than anything, more than just a gigantic frame, especially his lower body. It's not like, you know, gigantic. So I still think he has more athletic frame, as athletic you could be here at 290. So he's a pretty good athlete. Definitely in the 3-4, of course, he ran a lot of stunts in games. So that's one way to know how athletic a player is how much they use him in the games on the D-line, and he was used a lot. I said that he's somewhat stout at the point. For a big guy, him and Armstead have the same issue where you're that tall, you tend to stand up. Or even if you don't stand up, you're just higher naturally than other players. And so it's easier for them to get into your pads and, you know, get leverage and drive you. So at the point of attack, he's not always the best just because of how high he is. So I think pad level is something he's going to have to work with. There's going to be coaches that's just really going to have to train his muscle memory to keep him low. Now, as a result, I think against a double team, he's bad. He gets moved. And he stands straight up, and he gets moved. And so that's not good, especially in the 3-4 where your defensive linemen have to be able to control the line of scrimmage. They have to command double teams because if you get in the league and he's still doing that, they're not going to double team him for long. It's going to be a quick double team, then one of the guys are going to go off to the next level, to the linebackers. Then you screw because you only got – 5 in that box, because that's how 3-4s are, of course. 2 linebackers, 3 linemen. And so if you're playing base head up and he's getting destroyed on double teams, it's going to be an issue. His stack and shed ability is average. He's just inconsistent with his using his arm extension, which is fixable. And it's a good thing that he is as big as he is, and he has very long arms. So if you were able to fix that, you would have a beast of a player on your hands. If he can consistently use extension and keep his distance between the linemen, too many times he's chest bumping, which, you know, that means he's letting offensive linemen get up too close to him and blocking him and moving him out the way. I think his pass rush ability is below average. I think he's relentless. He goes hard. He's, you know, fighting for those, you know, however long the play is, that you know, 10 to 15 seconds. He's going at it, but he's raw. He doesn't have good pass rush moves that are down pack. He doesn't, you know, really understand how to set up his man, use his two-way go. So I think there's a lot of potential here with Buckner overall, but he definitely needs to be fine-tuned. Gave him a level 3 get-off, and that could be a scheme. I felt the same way with Armstead last year, where it almost seemed like they were asking them to come off slow and kind of just occupy linemen. So it might be that. Level 3.5 closing speed. Of course, he's a long strider, not super fast. Level 3 motor. I didn't think he went hard all the time. And level 2.5 hand technique. Like I said, that needs to be cleaned up. Buckner is a big, big-time hot prospect right now. And I think it's a little bit of a trap as far as his size is. I understand the potential is there, but I just don't see it in his technique right now. And I honestly think Eric Armstead was better at this point coming out, where he did show you a little better toughness in the run and a little more pass rush. And some people are saying Buckner's going to be better and all this. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how well that translates. We'll see what situation he gets in. But for right now, Buckner to me is just, you know, kind of not a boom. Well, maybe he is a boom or bust prospect for me. Huh? Boom or bust. There you go. All right, so number 2, A'shaun Robinson from Alabama. A'shaun was a 3-4 DN. This dude looks like a 40-year-old Kimbo Slice, but he's pretty sure he's not even 22 yet because he was a junior. So it's crazy how grown this dude looks, but very athletic for his size. Very fluid, a lot of stunts and everything, very explosive. Very stout at the point of attack. Not many people are going to move him. He's built compact. Sorry, let me go back. A'shaun 6'4", 312. Doesn't look 6'4", but, yeah, he's pretty stout. He's built pretty stout, very, you know, strong lower body. But, yeah, so he's still 6'4". But below average pad level, when he gets high, he does get exposed. He does get moved off the ball. I think he's naturally strong, so he's hard to move, but his technique against the double team is just average. I think he needs to get better and learn how to split those. He has a great ability to stack and shed. It's not always consistent, but how strong he is, when he does stack and shed, he throws linemen. You know, it's not just a quick swim and I'm off and go make tackle. Like, he's moving people. But he waits a little bit before he gets off the block, so kind of like I was saying earlier, but sometimes he waits too long and it misses the back, and so that's going to be an issue. But, yeah, shock in his hands, so I kind of talk about that too with D-linemen, the ability to, you know, shock someone, stone, kind of like offensive line when I said they stone people. Shock in the hands, they're able to move someone, you know, with your punch. Pass rush ability was poor to me. He just played bully ball. Talk about that later. Yeah, so I gave him a level 3.5 get off. His timing wasn't always good, but he's explosive when he does get off. 3.5 closing speed, which is pretty fast for a defensive tackle. A level 4 motor, stamina. I think he goes hard, but I think, you know, he's got to learn how to not pace himself, but he's got to get his endurance up so he can go hard for a whole game. And then level 2.5 hand technique. I think he just played a lot of, you know, I'm stronger than you type stuff. And, you know, he showed some quick swims and stuff now and then. But most of the time he was just, you know, trying to out-muscle people. And then Robert Kimbichi, Ole Miss, 6'4", 296. He was played a 3 technique. So Kimbichi, if you don't know, was the number one prospect in his draft class, and he was also the number one defensive end prospect. So coming to Ole Miss, that's what he was. Then he was moved inside to defensive tackle. So he played 3 technique and an even front. So he was somewhat stout. I think he could be moved off the line. His pad level is good. His double-team technique is average. but you know, he's quick enough to split. He's quick enough to split combo blocks because of, you know, his athleticism. His stack and shed was average. It was inconsistent. And he's more of a guy that's looking for quick penetration. Like, he's trying to, you know, explode through the gap, you know, especially on zone and stuff where he's not really looking to occupy linemen, which is what you want in a three tech and an even front, depending on your philosophy, but most people want people to penetrate. And he flashed some great pass rush ability, as you think he should, being a former defensive end, but it flashed it. It wasn't always consistent. So I gave him a level 3.5 get off, which you would want to be better, level 3.5 closing speed, level 4 motor, and a level 3.5 hand technique. Kandichi, like, just to say what it is, it's concerning, a bit of a red flag for me that he had to play at three tech. I don't think it was out of necessity. I think it was more so out of just his ability to, you know, keep his body and explosiveness where it needed to be a defensive end. And so that's kind of a red flag for me. And then a lot of people have a red flag with him not producing, not having a lot of sacks. And being inside is not, first of all, numbers don't always mean everything, especially at defensive tackle. So, you know, that doesn't really hit hard for me. It's more about watching the film and watch what he did. But, you know, he does have a lot of explosiveness and quickness still from being a defensive end, and putting that inside really can cause conflict. But he's got to be able to be more stout. He's got to be able to be stronger against the run and just stronger linemen once he gets to the league. So seeing where he goes, especially if he gets in a situation like Aaron Donald, where his skills were so ripe to be on a team that already had speed on the edge, it's because there was no way that he could be focused on when you had so much skill on the defensive line. And so as a result, we see what happened with Aaron Donald. He's able, especially as a three technique, as a one technique inside by the center, you, most of the time you already invited for a double team or, you know, at least going against two men and a pass pro. But as a three tech, it's a lot of one-on-one, a lot of two-way go, a lot of solo stuff. And so if he gets in that situation, we can see. But we got it. He's probably classic, you know, kind of like Clowney, naturally gifted, just didn't work hard enough. And so we got to kind of see where that goes. So, like I said, that's kind of consistent number three, but this is such a deep one. We got Andrew Billings from Baylor, which is a very athletic, quick guy for his size at 300 pounds, and also a world champ power lifter. We got Sheldon Rankins out of Louisville. Real quick, he's blowing up draft stock-wise. Not a high grade for me. He's very average. I don't think his get-off is good. I don't think his motor's good. So I'm not exactly sure what everybody's getting hyped on. I think he has just, you know, average to above-average talent. So we'll kind of see where that goes. We got Jaren Reed from Alabama, who at this point is pretty much passed up A'shaun Robinson. He was talked about as like one of the top D-line prospects or defensive prospects. But I think when people watch the tape and understand that Jaren Reed is probably a lot better. He was at the nose, but better pass rusher, better hand technique, everything of that nature. We got Kenny Clark out of UCLA. Another, you know, somewhat athletic nose tackle, but very smart, very strong. We got Vernon Butler out of Louisiana Tech, who is just gigantic, naturally strong. I don't think he's all that put together right now as far as technique, but like I said, big guy. Chris Jones out of Mississippi State, another huge guy, 6'6", 308. Mississippi State puts out some good people. He's stiff. He's kind of just, you know, a space eater, but some, you know, some you could work with. Sheldon Day out of Notre Dame, worked out as a linebacker, or not as, but did linebacker drills, kind of like the DNs do at the combine. Really weird. He's 6 foot, 286. I mean, I don't see, and his arms are short. I don't see them transforming him into a linebacker. But like I said, Notre Dame is one of those teams that I got to know a little more intimately, especially Sheldon Day, because the D-line coach at Notre Dame, I know him going way back. So the stuff he's been taught, I know he's got the great technique. But also, I saw Sheldon Day myself, you know, at practices for that time we were there, and he's the leader. He's hands down the leader. Like, he's, you know, they, because their practice is up-tempo and fast, so they go from thing to thing. They have to jog or run, and he's in front, like, you know, military marching. He's always in front. You know, I forgot they had, like, some little saying they say, and he's just saying it as they run, and I'm like, that's the guy. He's the leader. So it's kind of a spark plug and an underrated guy to look for. Now, a guy that I think is definitely top three is Jonathan Bullard from Florida. Now, he played DN, even in the even front. He played DN, but I think he's a three-tech all day in the NFL. He's 271, so a little lighter, but he's 6'3", not as long, so I don't think he's going to be on the edge. And not in the 4-3 anyway. In the even front, I think he's definitely a three technique. So while he might not be getting a lot of buzz as an end, I think this guy is just a monster. Monster. One of the best get-offs I've seen. I rate him at a 4.5 get-off. So he's just explosive, like flies off the ball. He's a leader. You know, he's got things to work with, but he produced a lot at the defensive end position. And for his size, that's impressive, because for his build and the way his size is, he's a defensive tackle. And so to have the defensive end ability just kind of puts him a huge leg above, for me at least. You know, this is kind of what you expected out of Robert Kambici, but you didn't get it. So he's someone you want to look out for. I think definitely he should be top three. I think so, kind of going into my rankings. Now, Dolphins, Washington, I didn't get to watch it. Austin Johnson. Well, I kind of watched them a little bit, but they don't have enough tape for me to do a full evaluation this round, so hopefully they get more. But you got Dolphins from Ohio State. You got Austin Johnson from Penn State. So two Big Ten guys. So it's just, this is such a deep group. It's ridiculous. But if I had to do a top three right now, that'd be tough. Like I said, I think number one for me would be Jonathan Bullard from Florida. Man, this is tough. I think number two for me would be Robert Kambici. Just so much potential and so much, you know, athleticism there. And then three is the toughest one. I want to say give me Jaren Reed and give me Andrew Billings from Baylor. Wow, I can't talk. Andrew Billings from Baylor. Give me him and Jaren Reed from Alabama as tie for number three. But very, very deep. So excited to see that. So kind of moving on from that. Going to talk about draft speak. So this is the part where I just kind of talk about a phrase or a word using draft by me or other, not other experts, I'm not an expert, but by other people that do draft stuff. So today's word is going to be, I got locked on to something else. But today's words or phrase is bully ball. So I kind of brought that up earlier. Bully ball is a term that I use for defensive tackles. I mean, not defensive tackles, defensive line in general, but a lot of defensive tackles. So bully ball is what I call for players, and it's not necessarily for players that are stronger than other players and really look to bully them. That's the idea. The idea is that I'm stronger than this guy, most of these guys, So instead of trying to get off the block, or instead of trying to, you know, do the technique that I'm taught, I'm just going to out-muscle him. And so when you talk about pass rush, yeah, there's a bull rush. So people say, well, he's just bull rushing. So bull rush, yeah, that's part of it. But then you have to finish the bull rush by getting off the block. Bull rush is a power move that you have to convert to speed at some point. So by power, you're getting them off balance, you're pushing them back, they're retreating, or their hands in the wrong place. Then you make your move to shed them and get to the ball carrier or to the quarterback. But with bully ball, these guys just keep pushing, 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 and put the head down, probably close their eyes, and they're just driving. And in the run game, instead of stacking shedding, you know, getting your extension and then looking to get off the block, you're just pushing these guys. You're just pushing them. And it's not always extension either. Sometimes they get chest to chest, which is terrible, because now you have no extension. You have no space. You're just with this guy chest bumping, and that's doing absolutely no good. So that's what I call bully ball. A'shaun Robinson, like I said, was one of the people I talked about with bully ball, but there's been so many examples over the years, the last few drafts, of prospects that just don't have hand technique. They just want to run into people and try to out-muscle. Like I said, it doesn't necessarily mean they're stronger. A'shaun is a freak, you know, in the strength department, and so he's trying to bully a lot of people. There's guys that have no strength or nowhere near as strong as the other guys, and they still bully ball because they just don't know how to play. And so bully ball just really irks me because it's just a sign that you don't know how to play. Defensive line, just like any position, you got to work on your craft, and the hand technique is such a finely tuned craft that you have to put in the work for it. And these guys just come off as lazy. And it's not that they're not even being taught. If they are being taught, they just go back out in the field and they don't really execute it, which is even more annoying. So anyway, that's bully ball. So the real grade, that part of the show where I talk about a draft from NFL team 3 drafts ago, and this is where you really get a look at the draft class instead of trying to grade them right at the day they're drafted. So we're looking at the Detroit Lions. 2012, number one pick, first round, we had Riley Reiff, tackle out of Iowa. A guy that they were talking about converting to guard or maybe to, you know, right tackle, kind of similar to, I forgot his name already, that one guy, Robert Gallery, there we go, kind of similar to him. But they end up playing him at left tackle, and that's where he ended up staying. So he held up enough to where, you know, they were comfortable with it. Still think at this point they're trying to move him over to right tackle. He's not great by any means. He's just solid enough. So, but still with the team, so good stuff there. Ryan Broles, receiver out of Oklahoma, second round. Came to a tragic end his career. It's not really career-ending injury, but he just has so many reoccurring knee injuries every year that his career has to be put on hold because, you know, he just couldn't stay healthy. So then we have third round, Dwight Bentley, cornerback out of Louisiana Lafayette, still with the team, never really been a starter, just kind of there, probably special teamer. Then we have Ronnell Lewis, DN out of Oklahoma. He's out of the league from the fourth round. We have Tahir Whitehead, linebacker out of Temple, fifth round. He's still with the team. Again, he started playing decently recently. He started playing pretty good recently, but got hurt. So we'll see kind of if he cracks the starting lineup next year coming off an injury. Chris Greenwood, cornerback from Albion, that I've never even heard of. Fifth round, no longer in the league, didn't even really stay with the team, kind of bounced around. Then we have Jonte Green, cornerback in the sixth round from New Mexico State, also not with the team or in the league, kind of bounced around. Sorry, he didn't bounce around. He was with the team for a couple years, but then he's been out of league, you know, practice squad and stuff like that. Then we have Travis Lewis, seventh-round linebacker out of Oklahoma, who is still with the team, but not a starter. So he started a few games this year just, you know, out of because of injury, but not someone that has cracked the lineup. So we look at this draft. We have eight players drafted. And out of those eight, we only have four. So half our players are still with the team. So at those numbers, it's not bad. But then we look deeper into that. Out of those four, only one really starts or contributes significantly. And then out of the four that you miss, that, you know, kind of aren't around, you have one guy that was a second-round pick in Ryan Bowles, and he was done because of injury. And that happens. I don't knock a person or a team too hard unless it was something he prior dealt with. I know he had issues in college coming out with that knee, but, you know, I don't knock him too hard. But that is something that's a little high for someone you knew that had problems with their knee. And then, but looking at the guys that aren't with the team, none of them play in the league. So, like I said before in the other episodes, it's one thing if you draft a guy that didn't stick with your team or you let him go or whatever, but if that guy's with another team balling, you know, at least you understand you evaluated them right and you saw something in them. Now you letting them go or giving them an opportunity, that's a whole different story from the draft. But from the evaluation part, you did your job. But when you got guys that aren't with the team and just not in the league and haven't been in the league, that means they are garbage to everybody. So that's, you know, that's a hard blow. So like I said, eight players, four with the team, one really starting, and then four players that aren't with the team and out of the league. I got to give this a D. And I would go lower, but your first-round pick is doing what you want him to do for the most part. So if you miss down the first round, that would, you know, just kill the draft. So the fact that they didn't miss out on that, I can't absolutely kill them. But the rest of this is pretty poo-poo. So definitely a D. Yeah. Not much to say about that. But anyway, so this has been Boomer Bust on the Divine Thoughts channel. If you like what you heard, please hit that follow button. If you like what you heard, look out for more content as I will be wrapping up the first round of evaluations for the 2016 draft. And, yeah, I'm your host, Terry, and thank you for listening.